This is episode number 18 with Amber Ray. Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Kwong, and each week I'll bring you an inspiring guest with an empowering message to help you rise higher and live your best life. Each guest shares their time of struggle and setback and what specific mindsets, tools, practices, or habits they use to overcome so that you can apply them to your life. This show is to remind you that you're not alone and that there's always a pathway up. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm grateful to be on this journey with you. Our struggles are a call for us to rise. So here we go. Let's dive deep now so we can rise higher together. Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Rise Higher podcast. Steph Kwong here. And I hope you all are ready for some powerful practices to support you in creating more peace, power, and freedom in your life. So today I have the incredible and inspiring Amber Ray, who is an author, artist, and speaker. And let me tell you, she drops truth bombs left, right, and center up in this episode. Now, Amber shares how she made the shift from living her life the way she was supposed to waking up to her truth and purpose. So 10 years ago, Amber was climbing the ranks in the tech digital advertising world, and she was doing exactly what she thought she was supposed to do. She looked successful to others, and yet she felt deeply empty on the inside and wasn't sure of why. So her overworking and underplaying and not taking care of herself culminated into a panic attack, her body breaking down, and feeling lost and alone. And in this episode, Amber shares her journey to wake up to her truth and how she started getting curious and the wondering began. And Amber goes in depth of how she connected where worry, fear, and panic were coming up for her and how she utilized those feelings and emotions to develop a deeper understanding of herself. And she also shares how she created a new relationship with worry, how she practiced it, compassion with herself, and chose wonder to free herself. So some of the things that we talk about in today's episode are how to dive into self-discovery and connect with your truth, the power of intention and letting go, steps to break free of old disempowering stories, how to manage overwhelming feelings that come up in your body, what to do when your inner worry voice kicks up, and how to learn versus get caught up in it. How envy is actually inspiration in disguise. A specific process on how to turn your negative thoughts around. Technology and how it's impacted our feelings of self-worth. And Amber teaches us her three-step process to worry better so that you can start making your magic happen. And of course, so much more. So I hope you enjoy all the goods in today's episode with Amber. And for everything that we mentioned in today's episode and for links to connect with Amber, you can check it out in the show notes. And that's over at stephaniekwong.com/EP18. Alrighty, here we go. Welcome, Amber Ray, to the Rise Higher podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
So pumped. I'm sitting with the beautiful Amber Ray at Habitas in New York City. So grateful I got to catch you.
Of course.
While I was strolling through town. And I'm really just excited to have you on the show because you completely embody what this show is about. You know, you're so raw and vulnerable and real with who you are, what you've been through, but have been so gifted in being able to find the tools to support yourself and then to be able to share them with others. Mm. So,
thank you.
Yes. And I love how we met. We actually have probably, if we went on Facebook, we probably have about 200 mutual friends because we keep circling around each other's vortexes. And one of our very dearest, one of my bestest friends, and I'm sure yours, Carmina, I first heard Amber's voice on her phone. And then one of our very dear friends, Nick Onken, introduced us to have you on the show. So really excited. And what we're also going to be talking about is Amber's book. You guys have to get it. You have to get it, but we'll talk more about it throughout the interview. So Amber is an author, artist, speaker, curious human devoted to waking up to truth. And I would love to just kick this off, Amber, by finding out, you know, what would you define as truth?
I knew you were going to ask that.
You know.
Oh, it was so weird.
Whoa.
I literally was sitting here thinking, she's going to ask me what is truth.
Shut up. We are so telepathically connected already.
And I was thinking in my head, how am I going to answer that?
Thank you for your honesty. Yeah. Yay. How are you going to?
I love it. Truth to me is a, you know, it's many things, but it's a vibration of alignment.
Mm.
And so truth is, it's not, I don't mean truth as in this is right or wrong, as this is the way. I mean, truth is what is in alignment with me as an individual. And truth then is different to every human.
Mm-hmm.
And so truth for me, like I know it because I feel it. Okay. If it's like this feeling of resonance where it's like a bell dinging, and I know, like, I can feel it in my body, I can feel it in my sacral region, and I can feel this sense of deep alignment.
Cool. And I would love to, because some people who are listening to this might not like some of the language that I know I use sometimes too on the show, as well as some of my guests, because we've done so much of the inner work that some of the languaging might be confusing for them. So what, like, first is alignment, right? And then how else would someone be able to tune in to feel that?
Alignment is when what I value, desire, am curious about, feel drawn toward is resonant with something that I come into contact with.
Okay.
So that could be a human, that could be a color, that could be a city, that could be a subject matter. And it's this feeling of like, oh, that thing is for me. That thing is resonant for me.
Yeah. And I think it's so, I've been really living or intentionally focused on living in alignment. Because I think we get so caught up with the how we're supposed to live, what we should do, or what we're just historically used to. So anything that is different feels funky, but really when we tune in, we can feel the resonance. Like you, it's like this lightness. For me, it's like a lightness in my body, like a fluttery, or you just get excited. Or it's just like a feeling. It can be grounded though too. It doesn't have to be like light and fluttery, but you just feel, it just feels better in your body versus like the out of alignment, the dissonance is so yucky.
The contraction, the body caving forward, the, oh, I don't really want to do this, but I think I should do this.
I should do this.
So actually, okay, so truth is.
Yes. Here we go.
Truth is like an onion, and we have layers and layers of conditioning. Who we were told we were supposed to be, who we learned to perform and please others. There's all these layers of conditioning. When we peel those back slowly, what we find is this pearl inside, and that is our truth. That's who we are before we learn who to be.
Yes. Oh, so good, so good.
Glad we got there together.
Yes, okay. High five. Yes. So now that we have the definition of truth, I know that you weren't always living yours. And I would love for you to share what your journey was to wake up to it and how you started living it.
Yeah, so if you would have met me a decade ago, I would have been raising or climbing the ranks in Silicon Valley and the tech world, startup world, and the digital agency advertising world. And I felt like that was what I was supposed to do. It looked great on paper. I was, you know, quote unquote, successful in the eyes of other people. I was, you know, making these things happen, making great money, living in one of the most innovative cities in the world. And yet I felt deeply, deeply empty on the inside, but unsure of why. And, you know, I was, my behaviors were pretty toxic and self-destructive, popping Adderall to get more done and to be thin because I had a story that men will only love me if I'm a certain weight. And Adderall was a tool to, you know, be okay and enough in the eyes of men. And, you know, I was just overworking, underplaying, not taking care of myself. And that all culminated into a breakdown moment. And so when I, you know, was in that moment of just feeling so lost and alone, because this was, you know, I think about like how technology and social media and the internet has enabled content like this and conversations like these to now be available and present. But I remember back then, I don't think like lifestyle design was not something being talked about.
Not at all.
Like there were like, it was like foreign to have, like to feel like you went down the quote unquote conventional path and to find dissonance with it was not something that was really being talked about. Mm-hmm. So I felt super alone. I remember going to my mentors and being like, something doesn't feel right. And they were like,
there's that dissonance in the body,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally. And I was breaking down in rashes. So my body was also telling me like, hey, no.
Yeah. Amber, if you don't listen when we're just giving you a little dissonance in your body, we're going to throw some rashes on there to make sure you're paying attention, girl.
Totally. And this went on for like nine months of breakdowns building up. I was like, okay, first rashes. Second, let's get you really sick. Third, like, let's like throw 30 pounds on you. Then let's like actually put you in a panic attack.
Oh, okay. Is that what it takes for Amber to listen? Yeah. A panic attack? It's like, 20, finally. Like
22-year-old Amber, yes.
Oh, geez.
I was like, I don't understand what's going on. And, you know, that was when I really actually started to get curious. Mm. And that's when the wondering really began, because I was like, okay, this isn't working. I don't know what will work, but let me start asking these questions. So I started asking the big questions like, who am I? Why am I here? Why is this happening? What is going on to my body? What information does my body have for me that it's trying to get my attention and tell me? I started asking these big questions, and I lost my dad when I was quite young. And so I always had this fascination around psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. So I was studying psychotherapy when I was like 11.
Love it.
So I had, you know, a level of self-awareness and internal curiosity where it wasn't like doing sort of the inner work or questioning like body's reaction to emotional story was something that I was familiar with at that point. I wasn't fully practicing it, living it, or embodied it, but I like read about it and was familiar with it. So early 20s, I started to really like try that on, started so to amazing. Really practice that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that led me to leave the world of tech, sell everything I own in a pretty quick period of time, in 48 hours, actually.
Wow.
I like let my boss know, sold, put everything up for sale, bought a one-way ticket and moved to New York. And
wow. Wait, so where were you living? Were you in,
I was in San Francisco?
About to say, yeah.
Yeah.
Tech, San Fran, back then.
San Fran. Yep. And I wrote a blog post about it. And basically I'd been writing on this Tumblr, because Tumblr was like the thing back then.
Yeah.
It was this place for me to start to like share and write about my thoughts and feelings. And it was really a personal journal for me. I didn't think people would be interested in my internal feelings and thoughts. Mm. But it turned out people were. And so when I made this leap from SF to New York, I shared about how like what I was going through, why I left, what I was in search of, which was like meaning and purpose and, you know, a feeling of being me, and I didn't know who I was yet. And so, you know, I put that out there, and then the post ended up going viral, and all these people started coming and saying, me too, I feel that way too. And that really started my writing journey.
Yeah, that's so powerful, because I think when we're open about our own journey, it allows people to, it's like that permission slip, right? It's like, oh, wow, I'm not alone in this. And hence this is why I'm, you know, also doing this podcast, is like, guys, look, it doesn't matter how accomplished people are, you know, or how much success we might have perceived that they've created for themselves, that we all still have our challenges, our struggles, and our setbacks. But when you're open and vulnerable and sharing them, it just keeps us connected,
yeah,
you know, as humans in this collective. So I love that you did that. And then obviously, the results show that people want to hear that side versus the perfect polished side.
Oh, totally. And what was so interesting about that time is that because I felt so alone in it, because people weren't really like, it wasn't a conversation happening, to fill my own void of loneliness, I wrote to myself, and it had me feel less alone because I then was connecting with myself. And so I think what happened is that self-connection and self-awareness translated, and then people could see themselves in it, which again was like a side effect or a impact that I never knew would happen.
Yeah, that wasn't your intention, is to become Tumblr famous.
Vulnerable so that other people will like this post and say me too. Like, I was not thinking about anyone else. I was thinking really about my own healing.
Yeah. So when you started deep diving into that and you were writing, like, was there a process that you had to write? Was it just like a dump every day of what was actually just present for you? Like, what was that process for you?
It was similar to, and I think it was a few years later that I came across this book, but it's similar to what Julia Cameron calls morning pages.
Yes.
In her book, The Artist's Way. Mm-hmm. Oh, game changing.
So good.
Which is just three stream of consciousness pages. And so I would wake up every day and just like, dump, like release what's in my space, what's weighing me down, what I'm afraid to say, what my intentions are, what I want to step into, how I want to feel. So it was like this process of like letting go and then intending for. Mm. And it was like, you know, I think I've heard of journaling practices where it's all about what you want to manifest, but I feel like until we like get rid of the shit that's in the way, we actually can't think about what we want to bring forth or call forth.
Absolutely.
And so it was really that practice of release and letting go.
That is so key and important because we can't create from a mucky place, right? Like if there's mud smeared all over the canvas, you can't paint anything really beautiful on top of it. You've got to clear the canvas first so that you can create on top of that. It's interesting because where I've always lived by the water, but this one particular place that I lived, there was like this perfect circular walk that you could do. And before I would go to bed every night, I would walk it and I would just like verbal vomit. Yeah. Everything for the day. I'm like, and then this sucked, and then that, like just to clear it, right? Yeah. So again, for a long time, I just resisted writing because I judged myself for writing. Mm. But I could talk. Yeah. And I did all the verbal vomit. And then once I felt energetically clear, it turned into gratitudes. Okay. And then I was just saying everything I was grateful for. And then I went to bed like that. And that was a game changing practice for me.
Yeah.
But yeah. And doing the mornings good too.
Yeah. And I found that every person's a little different. So like for me, writing has always been the most natural. Some people verbal is way easier. Some people like want to sit down with someone and share in circle.
Yep.
And so it's a personal invitation of what is the right outlet for me to express my truth, to express what's in my way. Mm-hmm. Cause it all looks differently for each of us. And like I've found people who are shaming themselves because they don't do the journaling practice. And I'm like, maybe journaling just is not your thing. Mm-hmm. Like what's the other format that actually will serve you? Cause the aim is not to have it like us feel shameful. The aim is that it actually serves us and supports us.
Yeah. And I love that you highlighted that because again, in previous episodes, actually journaling is a very healing process for many of the other guests that they've shared. And I love what you're highlighting again is that find what works for you.
Yeah.
Because and that's why I shared mine. I was like, I judged myself for writing. So I didn't want to write. And then I would feel bad for writing. Then I hear everyone saying that, oh, journaling, writing it down is so good. And I was like, I can't do it. Now I don't mind it. And I've like something opened up for me, but my way was verbal and other people might have their own expression of it, but clear it out.
Clear it out.
That's the goal.
Whatever the way is. Like punch pillows if you have to.
Yes. Get those wiffle bats or those sponge bats and whack things if you need to.
And for some people, it's like working it out, running it out. You know, there's different, it's really, how do you take what's stuck in the body and release it?
Yeah. I would love to get your thoughts on this. What do you think holds people back from living into their full potential?
So many things. I'd say the number one thing is the story they tell themselves about themselves. My fiance has this great idea for a book where you open it and it's a mirror and it says the problem and the solution.
Whoa.
Right?
Deep.
Right?
Yes. And then the end.
You know, literally, like, that's it. And like, it's funny because he's so not a writer. And so of course, mine's like 55,000 words and his is 4. The problem and okay, 5 words.
5 words, 5 words.
And a mirror and that's in the end. So 7 words.
Wow.
But it's like so profound.
It's so profound.
And I think of that a lot because I think that is what holds us back from living our solution is the person in the mirror. And so it's what are we telling ourselves? What is the story we're buying into? And really getting curious about what we choose to buy into. Cause so often like we as humans, we come in with so much wonder and curiosity and then we're conditioned and socialized into so many belief systems, whether that's family, cultural, religious, whatever it is, it's, you know, there's so many, and many of those can influence who we think we are and what we think we're capable of. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they don't serve us. Sometimes they serve us and that's great. And other times we realize, wait, where did this come from?
Yep.
Where did I learn this? Why am I telling myself I'm not good enough to do this, that I'm not ready yet? Why am I telling myself that I have to look this way in order to do this? Where is that story coming
from?
Or to
have this, yeah. I love that you say that. And something that I do sometimes with like my coaching clients, I'll always ask like if they, to try to shift where they are, if they're really stuck in a belief that I can see isn't serving them, I'll just say like, when did you decide that?
Love.
Right?
Yeah.
Because then all of a sudden like, when did I decide that? And it actually stops you in your tracks from just like running the same programming and question it, exactly what you're already saying. It's like, stop and question, where the heck did this come from? Yeah. And does it support me ultimately for what I want and where I want to go in my life? Is this moving me towards ascension, or is it keeping me stuck or pulling me back?
Totally. Love that. And what I love about that question is that so often people don't realize that they're making a choice, that they're actually deciding to believe that. So when did you decide that? Has them pause and be like, wait, I'm choosing this? Wait, can I choose something else?
Mm-hmm.
Love.
Yeah. There's a bazillion thoughts out there. People choose the ones that empower you.
Yeah.
So why do we worry? Because you are the queen of telling us why we worry and how to get ourselves out.
Well, we worry because we've evolved as a species to worry. And, you know, worry is a part of our brain, part of this threat mechanism system that protects us and keeps us safe. So ultimately, we worry so that we don't die. And and that's beautiful. And so that, you know, worry and fear can be really, really useful when, let's say, we're like swiping right on Tinder and some guy's like, hey, baby, come over right now. I want to do dirty things to you.
Oh.
Worry might be like, I'm really going there.
Oh, okay.
Worry might be like, don't go to his house. This could be dangerous. And that's really useful worry.
It's totally useful.
Or let's say we're going on a hike and we are standing really close to the edge of the mountain. Worry is probably going to be like, back up, could fall. And so, you know, worry could actually be a super useful tool in our lives. Or we have a big meeting next week and worry might get really chattery saying, hey, are you prepared? What are you going to say? Da-da-da-da-da. How
don't
do you want it to
stupid.
Go? Don't look stupid. Yeah. And while those aren't always the kindest voices of worry, that is worry trying to get our attention saying, this is really important. We care about this. Let's be ready. Let's pay attention. And so I think, you know, worry often gets a bad rap.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the question isn't how do we get rid of worry? It's how do we worry better?
Ooh.
And
say more about that. I like it.
And really that's around having, when we allow ourselves to worry and we embrace worry as a part of our human nature, which again reduces the danger in our lives, we can then discern between what's useful worry and what's toxic worry. So useful worry are, you know, all the things that I just described, but you know, the thing about our worry brain or our animal brain is that it did not evolve to know the difference between a really important deadline, a life, you know, threatening situation, and a really meaningful and novel project that means so much to us.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime worry hates unknowns, uncertains, things it can't control.
Yep.
And so starts to get really loud and go into like very loud inner chatter and chaos. So, you know, if I'm, let's say for me with writing the book, that was the biggest dream of all the dreams for me. And so of course it's the one that came along with the most worry. You're not good enough to do this. People might hate it. You'll get judged. Who do you think you are? Like, you don't have a degree in this, like on and on and on and on and on. Yeah. That sort of worry chatter was because it was unknown and so meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when, you know, that sort of, I find that when the inner critic gets really loud around things that are meaningful to us, that's because it's pointing us toward where we must go. And that's outside of our comfort zone and into new terrain and, you know, and exploring our curiosities.
Yeah, we don't like that unknown or uncertain. For those of us who are reformed controllers, I'm pointing at myself. But yeah, that's where the magic happens, right? Yeah. There's so much truth in that when you see that little diagram on the interwebs where it's like, you know, your comfort zone is a small circle you live in. And then where the magic happens is everything outside of it. And I think when you learn to be able to manage the worry, be able to decipher whether it's the healthy worry or the, you know, unhealthy is important. So how would you, because I know, again, you are the genius at this, but when our inner worry voices start speaking up, what do we do? What do we do? How do we learn from it as opposed to get caught up in it?
So there's three steps, but because you mentioned that comfort zone graphic, I just have to share because I literally redo that in the book. And I say, you know, there's like where the magic happens and then the other circle instead of your comfort zone, it's where the freaking out, overthinking, panicking, anxiety and fear happens. And then eventually the magic. I think we forget about that part.
Yeah.
It's like, it's... Oh, because I remember when I was leaving my comfort zone, I was like, where is the magic? Why do I feel like a crazy person? And then I realized that I kind of had to feel like a crazy person at first.
To get to the magic.
And work with those feelings in order to get to the magic. So the magic happens, but not necessarily the way I thought.
So magic, So it gets a little messy before the magic. They should say like comfort zone, messy, then magic. Yeah, okay, okay, okay. Exactly. You know, those are the steps. Yeah, yeah, it's not like, oh, it's all in a pretty bow and magic just happens. Yeah. No, it gets crazy.
No, she gets crazy. She gets real.
It gets so real. Yeah, and I love that you say that because I think for some people who, you know, they just want to get to the magic or they're scared of the mess. And like, it's okay to get messy. It's okay to get dirty and not be perfect and to figure it out along the way. But again, we've got to get our subconscious mind to buy into that. Cause even consciously we know that, but how do we empower ourselves, our subconscious to like really get on board? So
totally.
And it's through practice. And I'm sure you're going to have three steps. What you can practice.
Yeah. So here's the thing about magic. Magic happens when we learn to be in relationship and work with the mess. And so
here we go.
Here's how we work with the mess. There are three steps. So when that worry voice is getting loud, when you're feeling paralyzed by fear, the first step is to name it. And Dr. Dan Siegel, he's a psychotherapist. He calls it name it to tame it. And neuroscience research shows that when we can put words to our emotional state, so maybe, you know, right now there's some thoughts flying around in my head, like, who am I to do this? And am I good enough? And I notice that my heart's beating a little fast and I'm feeling some tension in my body. When we can name that, we can tame the sensation that we're experiencing by up to 50%. So the first step, name what you're feeling to tame it.
Huge. And I would say, I love that you, and I want to point this out, is naming it by speaking out what's happening, but also describing the feelings in your body. That's such like a powerful mindfulness thing too, to describe the sensations instead of just going, these are the thoughts that are running my head. No, actually describe out the sensations in your body as well.
Yeah. Is there like tension in your shoulders? Is your jaw clenched? Are your hands sweaty? Are your like, what is the, look at your body language. And there's so much information and insight in that. And so the second step is to dialogue and talk to it. So I'm a big fan of character and archetype work. Mm-hmm. So I like my inner perfectionist is, her name is Grace and she's a 30-something British woman and she has short blonde hair and she wants everything in a very neat and tidy box.
Oh my goodness. Does she shop at Chanel?
She totally shops at Chanel.
And does she have a cute little puppy underneath her arm?
Yes.
A little Yorkie. Yeah,
absolutely. I love it. And so it's really learning how we can talk to these parts of ourselves. You know, mine in an advanced way looks like Grace. And so like if I am writing something and all of a sudden my worry voice is saying, you know, this is terrible, everyone's going to hate it, you should stop writing before, you know, we kid ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's when I'll pause and be like, hey, Grace, I see you hanging out here. Like, why are you showing up? And Grace might be like, well, you know, just really care about the end goal of creating something really great here. And I just don't think this is great yet. And I'll be like, thank you, Grace. We need to create shitty first drafts before we create something great. Mm. So like, you know, that's a specific example of say the perfectionist showing up, or let's say that you just like have these thoughts of not being good enough and you notice tension in your body. You could talk to that tension and be like, hey, tension, what message do you have for me? Or hey, like thought of not being good enough, where did you come from? This is where really we can apply curiosity and be a detective to our own emotions and body sensations and find out what messages they have for us.
Totally. So key. And again, going back to what we said, or you said before, letting it just speak, you know, parts work is so powerful because the fear just needs to express itself. Like, can it say what it's feeling? Can it say what its concern is? Mm-hmm. But that you hold a loving space for to express.
Yes.
And then go, yo, homie, it's all good. I got you. I'm Amber Ray. I'm Stephanie Kwong. We got you.
We got you.
You're okay.
Which is step three.
Ah, look at that.
Which is, well, it's actually more in step two. It's finding that place of compassion.
Yeah.
For whatever fear is emerging. Because again, remember, and I like to think that fear is often love in disguise. So like, I think about a time when I was a kid and I ran down the yard chasing a ball and was about to run into the road. And my mom screamed, stop, you know, and I thought, whoa. And that was love because she didn't want me to get hit by a car, you know, and it just sounded like fear. Yeah. So oftentimes fear is showing up because it's loving us and wants us to just listen, tune in, hold a loving space and hear what it has to say.
Yep. Instead of judging it more.
Instead of judging it. Yeah. Or making ourselves wrong for it, which then we just end up in a toxic cycle. So then the third step is to make a request. And so it's like, once we've heard it, then we can say, okay, like, hey, totally hear you're afraid of that. we got this. And I like, I'm going to ask that you maybe go get a massage right now while I work on this. And then we can revisit this later. Or like with the perfectionist, I'll say, hey, totally understand you want this to be really great. We have the same goal, but here's the space that I need to get messy in order to get there. Cool. If you give me a little breathing room for me to like get messy. And then what happens is that the worry or the perfectionism or the fear, you know, releases its grip and allows us to do our thing.
Woo. That is so good. I love it so much.
Woo.
And that's so powerful to work with any of your fears, any of your worries, in a really powerful way. Dang, girl. So good.
Thanks.
Y'all should take some notes on that one. Or better yet, get Amber's book.
Yeah.
Choose Wonder Over Worry, you guys. We're definitely going to link it up in the show notes. You must get. The cover's just gorge anyway. So, yeah.
And I painted the letters.
Did you really? Yeah. I was actually going to ask you what fonts you use. But, of course, you paint and make your own fonts. Whatevs. I'm going to need you to make me a font. It's really good. So, let's talk about emotions. Because I know that you're also really well-equipped on managing them. Like, let's say certain vibrational, like certain emotions start to come up, mm-hmm. and maybe it's so overwhelming in your body, mm-hmm. right? Obviously, I know our mind-body connection, whatever we're thinking, usually triggers a feeling, or sometimes the feeling comes first mm-hmm. if there's a threat outside of us or perceived threat that then can, it's like almost faster than where the thought can go. How would you manage it in the same way, or what are ways like to just be with our emotions in a powerful way?
Yeah, I sometimes even have on my calendar like feeling check-ins.
Ooh.
Which helped me manage not getting to that place. Because here, what I find is that emotions become really extreme and exaggerated when I haven't been tuning in, listening, or following the cues. Like this actually happened 2 weeks ago where I like really like was drowning in emotions because it was like crazy book time. There was so much on my plate. I was like, go, 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 not creating space for self-care and nourishment and reflection and feeling the feelings that were coming up. I was just like, I'm going to power through. And then all of a sudden I was like drowning in all kinds of feelings.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and when that happens, it's creating space and, you know, turning off technology and letting whatever is going to come up to come up. There is, my friend told me about this recently. I'm forgetting what it's called, but there's like an ancient Greek religion where they believe that emotions visited you. And I love this.
That's cool. Basically, so it's not who you are. They just come and go.
They just come. And like our role was like back then, they believed that emotions would come and our job was to let it pass and move through us and then release it. And I find that so useful to think about when I'm in that state. I'm like, oh, this emotion is visiting me. I am not this emotion. Mm-hmm. It's visiting me right now. I'm going to let it come through, pass through. I'm going to see if it has any information, wisdom, insights for me, and then I'm going to let it go. And, you know, I find when I'm in that space, my biggest fear is that it's going to stay and not go away.
Yeah, I think that's probably why. Yep. I think that's why a lot of people don't want to feel it. They're, thinking, will it stay forever? Two, am I equipped to handle it? Because it can feel so overwhelming.
Yeah.
What would you tell them?
Be gentle with yourself. Let it come and I promise it will go. It might take a few days. It might take a few hours. It might take a few minutes. We don't know. It's, you know, it's different every time. But I'd say really, you know, sit with it. Be gentle and kind with yourself. Take like, pretend like I like to think that I'm a little child. And I'll even like, I have a visualization when I'm really like feeling a lot where I'll close my eyes and I'll imagine myself picking myself as a baby out of a crib and really holding myself. And that really stabilizes my emotions and brings me back to center. So yeah, be kind to yourself in that space and let it move through you. And, you know, either sometimes during, maybe after, just reflect on, you know, why it's showing up and what it's there for.
Mm-hmm. That's so key. Again, I love how you said, give it the time and space. As I shared with you earlier, I'd gone through my own health challenges and I was still even trying to control the timeline of it. I was like, come on, be done. Like I started getting better and I was like, yeah, it's better. And then the moment I would have a massive flare up, I would get so frustrated and angry because I just wanted to be done. And it was such a reflection of how I deal with other things in my life. Cause usually how you do one thing is, I don't always say, you know, people say like how you do one thing is how you always, I don't really prefer the word always or never because there's always an always. There is an exception, usually an exception to the rule. But I'll say how you do one thing is usually how you do everything. And when I noticed how I was being with even my healing, I was like, can it be done yet? I've suffered enough. It's been months. And then I had to think about, wow, where else in my life am I wanting things to be done or to force it and to push it and not be, and even towards myself? And where am I not being gentle and allowing it to be however long it needs to? That's a practice.
Yeah, totally.
So anyway.
I so can relate to that desire to control the timeline.
Right.
Make it end sooner.
Yeah. All right, fine. I gave it 5 minutes. It should be done.
Yeah.
Go away.
Yeah.
I don't want to feel this emotion.
It gets worse and worse and worse. And then what I found, at least, is that when I finally surrender and say, okay, you know, you may know better than me right now, what happens is that it then
leaves. It leaves. Totally. It's the irony of it all.
Lesson. Stop trying to control everything.
And the moment you're like, okay, I want control, they're like, all right, great. Now I'm done. Bye. You're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
That's all I had to do. And it's the remembering of that, I think. I mean, you know, human over here. And the power of this, though, is in the practice. I think it's like you start to build this new muscle of how to be with yourself, right? Loving yourself in a whole different way that you can be compassionate and accepting and forgiving and all the other goodness of what self-love is. And just learn to manage these thoughts because they're always going to be there.
Yeah.
I know some people are like, I'm just going to annihilate my negative thoughts. And like, have fun with that one. That ain't going to work. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. And it's really just a matter of having the tools to manage it and your tools. I love that three-step process. I'm going to just have you recap it one time real quick. So one, two, and three.
One, name it. Two, talk to it. Three, make a request. Yeah. And it's, because it's not about getting rid of. And so anytime, literally one of the most frequently asked questions I get is, how do I make my fear go away? How do I get rid of my worry? And I'm like, we start with the language right there.
Yes.
Because, you know, we get rid of leftovers. We get rid of clothes that don't fit us anymore, but we don't get rid of part of our, you know, how we've evolved as a human, part of our brain. And so the emotions, it's really, it's just a question of how do I work with them and how do we work together?
Yeah. And as you said, some of the fears is useful.
Yeah.
And obviously some is not. But it's just how you be in the face of them and how you can, and the more you practice, the faster you can move through it. You can spot it right away. And you're like, oh, there it is again.
Yeah.
And you can move through it.
Which is something I want to mention. You know, at first, this is going to feel really difficult and trying. Like, it's the first time you've ever gone to the gym and you're like, name it. Oh, I don't, what am I thinking? What is my body doing? Talk to it. Now you want me to talk to this thing and then like make a request, boundaries. Like, I'm still learning boundaries in my life. You know, whatever is coming up for you, that's totally fine and okay. I promise it gets easier. Like, it, for me, it's at the point now where I can real time, boom, 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 and like move through it in sometimes 30 seconds.
That's so good.
But it took it's like any practice.
So let's say you make the request. It's like, all right, cool. Yeah, no, I'll go get a massage right now. Fear is telling you that. But within seconds, it comes right back.
Yeah. Then I think it's like, I like to think of it as a child acting out and throwing a tantrum. And so if a child was acting out in front of me and throwing a tantrum, what would I do? Because it's so much easier for me to think about when it's just me thinking about my own emotions, I get caught. But when I can
separate it
so it's something objective, like, and then I'm not thinking about myself and I'm thinking of how would I relate to a child right now? Well, I'd probably turn toward the child and be like, hey, what's up? I love you. Like, it's okay. We got this. And so maybe it's a little reassurance or maybe it's like a little bit more inquiry. But think of your emotions as sometimes, you know, children throwing tantrums. And treat them lovingly.
I want to bring this up because we were talking about this right before we started rolling on this episode, which I think is so key. And I'd love to get your thoughts of how you move through it. But I know you shared about when your fiance fell. Can you share that story? What happened to your physical body? And maybe how you moved through that, because I think for some people, their old stuff will get triggered.
Yeah.
And then how do you manage it? So,
yeah. So 2 or 3 years ago, so my father died when I was young and then I ended a relationship with a stepdad. And so I had this story about male figures that men I love will leave me and I'm not worthy of love. And so it was this fear of abandonment that I don't even think I became present until my mid 20s. And so I did a lot of work around realizing that I will never leave me. And I was projecting my own fear of abandonment onto these male figures in my life when it was really the work of knowing that I will always be with me. And so, you know, doing all that work in the midst of that, my fiance threw out his back, but was going through a lot of like breathing issues. One time he thought he was having a heart attack. Like when, like there was just like a lot going on with him health-wise. And he, in the middle of the night, woke up to use the bathroom. And I, you know, because he had hurt his back, I was concerned that he was like getting out of bed and walking to the bathroom. So I woke up and followed him. And when I followed him in, all of a sudden I came in and he was wavering and he fell to the ground. Like, and we had this, our shower was made of this like giant glass. And he literally was like, I don't know, less than an inch away from hitting his head on that glass, which would just been horrific.
Crazy.
Like it was a thin piece of glass. It would have, he would have, I don't know what would have happened. It would have been bad. And then when he landed on the floor, he started shaking and I just started screaming and freaking out, did not know how to handle it. And luckily my friend Laura was staying with us and she's an osteopath. So she like ran in with a spoon of honey and threw a wet cloth on his head and was able to like bring him back. But what triggered for me was he's dying and he's going to leave. And I just like, literally I'm getting emotional as I say it. That triggered for me that early trauma. And I ended up losing like a giant chunk of hair. I don't even know the size of it. It was like 2.5 inches, you know,
diameter. Like circle, yeah.
But it took me, cause I have so much hair, curly hair. It took me like 9 months to notice.
Whoa.
How did you notice? Were you just like washing your hair? And you're like, what is this bald spot?
Haircut. I didn't even notice washing my hair, which is crazy because it's like once I found it, I was like, how did I not?
And then they found it.
And my hairdresser was like, whoa, have you been really stressed? He's like, and it's called alopecia. And he's like, he's like, oh, you know, you just have a little, we call it a stress spot. And he brushed it off, not wanting to freak me out. And then I went home and I was like, babe, my hairdresser said I had a stress spot. And so he lifted up my hair and he almost fainted because it was so big and so bald. And, you know, and I had been feeling things and, but it was interesting that it took me 9 months to even notice. And then that's when I, you know, I did all the like tests to make sure nothing else wasn't wrong. But how I moved through the trauma is I really, you know, I recognized, I don't think until that moment I recognized how that fear of abandonment was so deeply driving a lot of things that I was doing. And so it just made me more aware of that and had me really turn toward that, get more curious about that. Cultivate practices around, again around me not abandoning me and always coming back to me as the source. And you know, I think it's still something that it can get triggered. I sometimes imagine that Farhad like got in a car accident. It's such a deep journey wound.
Yeah. You know, I because this is audio and there's no visual, I wish I could draw it out for you guys. I'll probably maybe do like a video at some point and put it on my YouTube. But an old teacher of mine showed me this diagram where basically he drew like a container and he said in the container, you know, at the bottom, he put like, he made it, shaded it dark. And he's like, this is all your fears, your like programming that doesn't work, right? Necessarily for who you want to be and what you, it's like your traumas, your junk. And then he says, and then when you start doing growth work, right? He then drew a bigger container outside of it. So he's like, what do you notice? And the two things are, one, you now have more tools to deal with the with the trauma and the shit that's there. But then the other thing to notice is the trauma's still there. However, the container is now bigger in size in comparison to the trauma that was in the original sized container. And then, of course, as you continue to grow, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, the container. And the lesson always is it doesn't go away. So I think sometimes, and this is what came up with my health issues recently, I'm like, I thought I processed all this. You know, I catharsisized all of it. I've, you know, done everything that I needed to do to release some of the trauma I experienced. And it's like, no, there's still bits there to go. And it's just, that's why this is an evolution and a journey. It's not like a one and done type of thing. But that's so powerful what you shared. Can you share how you kept coming back to yourself? What was that specific practice? Because I think a lot of people do struggle with the abandonment stuff. I think that's very true for many people. What would you suggest on how best to work through that?
Yeah, well, I think it's first the recognition that like, you know, in some way my dad did leave us. And so like, they're actually, they're like, you know, what actually happened was he did leave. And, you know, while I made that mean that I wasn't worthy of love, you know, he decided to pursue. So that, like, you know, however you define abandonment, maybe, yes, an abandonment of some sort happened. But that was, you know, almost 30 years ago. And so, you know, things happen in our lives and it's like from the past that are really real and that we have real experiences around. But then the question is, what do we want to do about them today? And so I think it's just one, recognizing and acknowledging, like, yes, that happened. I also made it mean this, but that was very real for me. And that was how I knew how to deal with it, you know, as a child. So having compassion for that. And then in terms of coming back to me, I have the sort of the philosophy or the frame that everything in life is a mirror. And so back to the opening the mirror, the problem.
We just need that book.
So, you know, anytime I'm thinking something outside of me is causing me pain or trauma, I just come back to, and how can I fill that void or that need? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think it's just the practice of always coming back to self, whether it's like blaming the president or, you know, blaming a past wound. It's coming back to, wait, how, like, what is this revealing for me? Mm-hmm. And how can I show it for myself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And everything, like, that externally that upsets us is really just pointing to either a story that we've made up and we're holding on to, a belief or a wound that's within that just needs our attention and love. Mm-hmm. And either just needs love and compassion, or it needs to actually be reworked.
Yeah.
Because if it's not working for us, you gotta shift that.
Totally.
Sucka.
And I love Byron Katie's work around this.
So good.
She has the, it's called The Work.
Yeah.
And she has, if you go to her website, byronkatie.com, she has like a whole worksheet you can fill out, which is all around, like, she did this really powerful. I watched this video of her around actually someone who was like, had real issue with Donald Trump. And she was able to help her realize that he was illuminating her own deep, dark lineage and fear. And that she could turn that around. And like, that doesn't mean that she has to like love or change her, necessarily her opinion, but like thinking that like he was going to cause her and her family's like death and all the, you know, all these stories she was creating, she could get a handle on those.
Totally.
And so I think it's so interesting. The questions are, is it true? You know, is the first question. And oftentimes it's like, yeah, of course it's true. Which is, it begs the second question. Can you be sure that it's true?
And that's when you got to go,
Yeah. Can I be sure? I'm blanking on what the third question is, but
who would you be without the thought?
I thought that was the first one or the fourth one.
I thought the fourth was a turnaround.
Okay, maybe.
All right, let's look it up. I got my laptop here. The Work, Byron Katie. Type. Hold on, guys. It's so good. Mm-hmm. Four questions. Come on, laptop, work with me. Four questions to change your life. Here we go.
Oh yeah. So the third one is, how do you react? What happens when you believe that thought? So that really tunes into like how you're responding because of the story. And then the fourth one is, who would you be without that thought?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the turnaround comes in. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if it's like, well, Farhad is causing me pain, you know, a turnaround might be, I am causing myself pain. Or even, I am causing Farhad pain.
With my cray-yay.
With my cray-yay. And so the turnaround is being able to, like, you know, find evidence that it could be viewed a different,
yeah,
a different perspective.
It could be that it's being viewed currently, usually the pain that we feel is because we're looking through the lens of an old wound,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
that just needs healing. Because anything that we experience, like guilt, shame, resentment, blame, I believe is just disempowering us, and we were not built to be disempowered in, mm-hmm, this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just the lie that we're living, that that's where we need to realign ourselves back to our truth. So I just want to say this one more time. First question, this is the Byron and Katie's four questions to change your life. One, is it true? Two, can you absolutely know that it's true? Three, how do you react, or what happens when you believe that thought? And four, who would you be without that thought?
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad you brought that in, Amber.
Yeah, she's so good. So powerful.
It's like four questions, and it's like literally can completely turn your thoughts around.
Yeah. Mm. And what I love is that it's really, you know, so much of the work is about illuminating the old story.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then people are often like, okay, then how do I, like, I want to like make it better and do all the things. And it's like, sometimes actually just illuminating that old story, mm-hmm, creates an opening. Mm. And that's where the shift comes from. And so I'd start with just illuminating the bullshit story.
Yeah. There we go. I wanted to ask you this because I know this was actually on your site and I was reading it and I was like, ooh, I want to get Amber's thoughts on this. Ooh. You said in an age that's more connected through technology than ever before, we're increasingly disconnected from who we are. It's easy to swipe right to fill a void of loneliness, to pop a pill to create a fleeting sense of self and to measure our self-worth against our Instagram likes. Mm-hmm. Let's talk technology and how it's impacted our feelings of self-worth.
Yeah. You know, what's so interesting about technology is that it has this promise of connecting us. And what's happening is that we're losing ourselves in the process and we're losing connection with ourselves because it's not true person to person deep connection. It's connection with the device. But what is also powerful about technology is that it's a mirror. And so let's say I'm scrolling through Instagram and suddenly I feel envious and then insecure and begin doubting myself and comparing myself. You know, that's actually a really powerful way to see my shadow. And so I could blame Instagram and say, I'm just deleting Instagram and making it go away. Or I can say, why am I comparing myself to this person? Or, you know, I often think that envy is actually inspiration in disguise because envy is illuminating. You know, I see something in them. If I see something in them that makes me envious, I see something in me that's unleashed or that has yet to be unleashed.
Yep.
And so it's like, oh, they just got a movie deal for their book. Well, like maybe that's illuminating a desire around different formats to bring my message to the world that I have not yet, you know, realized.
So good.
And so like, that's where I think like, I love that shit coming to the surface with Instagram, mm-hmm. like, because it's saying, oh, there's something for me to look at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Instead of starting to cut yourself off from sources of the world, like now I can't look at Facebook. Now I can't look at Instagram. Now I can't eat this food. I can't go to this restaurant. I can't talk to this person. It's like, you're completely now putting yourself in a box versus can I be with Facebook and this person or this restaurant or social media and still be empowered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, good. And I mean, I will say from like a technologist perspective, a lot of these tools are designed to have us be addicted. Mm-hmm. And so it's like the system is not designed for us to like take care of ourselves with the technology, mm-hmm. which is where there's Tristan, I'm forgetting his last name right now, but Tristan Harris, I think he has a movement called Time Well Spent. And he was he was doing ethics at Google and basically has the notion that engineers, it's the responsibility, people who are designing technology, it's the responsibility to think about how we spend our time well, not how do we spend as much time on the app so that it drives advertising revenue such that, you know, it makes more money.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. And I think technology is great when you use it for your good, but when it starts to use you, mm-hmm. right? Like there's an addiction to it. You can't put it down the first thing you do when you wake up or you know, the last thing you do when you go to bed. That's when it's actually got a control over you.
Oh yeah.
I remember when I pulled into Bali last December and like literally as you're pulling out of the airport, there's a huge sign that says explore where the Wi-Fi doesn't work.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I did not see that when I was
there. When you pull out of the like airport, it's like over where the cars all exit and pay. But I was like, yes, that's what we need to do is get out in the world, cut off your Wi-Fi, do what we used to do when I was a kid. There was Wi-Fi. Yeah, be in wonder.
Yeah.
And go play. I love what you said earlier. You're like, I was overworked and underplayed.
Yeah.
I heard you say that. I'm like, I need to bring that back in because that was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Play, 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 play. So I would love for you to share about your book. Tell everybody about the magic of your book, and we're going to have, you guys got to go get it because it's magic.
So the book is called Choose Wonder Over Worry, mm-hmm. and it's literally about everything that we just talked about. I'm like, we're covering all the things, but you know, really it brings to life worry and wonder as these two characters inside of our head. Worry is our inner critic and wonder is our curious inner guide. And so in the book, you meet worry and wonder, you meet when worry is useful, when worry is toxic, you understand how to discern between the two. And then you meet wonder's friends, which are courage, curiosity, and compassion, and how they can play in our lives. And then we move through all these different worry myths, which are these stories and these beliefs. I'm not good enough. Does my voice matter? So we're meeting perfectionism, we're meeting anger, we're meeting shame, we're meeting anxiety, and we're turning toward them with wonder and
so
curiosity.
Good.
And so in the way, like my writing style is super raw, super vulnerable. I'm like, let me like pull out my guts and show them to you in all the ways that I have like doubted myself and been insecure and been like, you know, I just like really bring forth those stories as a way of, you know, hopefully it being a mirror for you to see yourself. But then it's also woven in with neuroscience and psychotherapy and all types of different experts and people I've met along the way. And then lots of wonderventions, I call them, which are worksheets as well as journaling prompts throughout.
So good.
And then it ends with the union, but I don't want to tell because it's, again, it's not, you know, so much of this work isn't about worry versus wonder. It's about worry and wonder mm-hmm. and how do they work together.
Beautiful. So go get the book to get the find out the union. beautiful. So Amber, what's something unique about you that most people don't know?
I don't know why this came up, but it's the first thing. So I'm going to go with it, that I'm Native American.
Mm.
Yeah. And I, you know, something unique about me that I don't even know is what my full ethnicity is.
So have you did the 23andMe?
I'm very soon, but okay. I, you know, I lost my dad when I was young. And then within when he died, his grandmother and his sister died. It was like very tragic, of totally separate things, like within 6 months of each other. And I don't know much about his lineage, but I've been told that my grandmother was 50% Native American. Mm. And that like, there's a whole, I don't know where they come from. You know, people never knew what my ethnicity was growing up. Everyone's like, we're confused about what you are.
Well, and your last name doesn't really give anything away.
Well, my last name is actually my middle name. That I've made my last name.
Tricky.
So I was born Amber Ray Pritzel. And I don't know, Pritzel actually comes from, I think, somewhere in Germany.
Okay.
And then my mom remarried and changed my last name. And then they divorced. And I was like, I don't want his last name. And so I actually, like weeks ago, my name is officially now, I changed it officially as Amber Ray.
Nice.
So it just like, it feels like the truth of mm-hmm. who I am. And, you know, my mom, side crazy story, my mom had a really serious accident before I was born, and she woke up and they actually thought she was dead and like were preparing to put her in a body bag at the scene of the accident.
Wow.
And she woke up a week later and found out she was 5 weeks pregnant with me. And so, and she like lost like so much blood, had so many blood infusions. I mean, it was like the AIDS days. And so like for the first 9 years of my life, we had to like go check to make sure that we didn't have AIDS.
Wow.
Because of the transfusion and the amount of blood that she mm-hmm. lost. But she, when I was born, she said I was her Amber Ray of golden light.
Oh.
And so like that really feel like that, I feel like was my like name, oh. you know, like that I feel like was my like name, mm-hmm. you know?
You are Amber Ray of golden light. I love it. When you're in a really dark place, what's your go-to to get out?
Mm, to go in.
Oh, yeah.
Go in to go out.
Yeah. You're like, I'm going in. I've got my hammer. I've got my headlamp. We're going in.
Got my magnifying glass yeah. and my flashlight.
And I've got a cup of hot cocoa just in case that person, that inside needs a little love and nurturing.
Totally.
And knowing what you know now, Ms. Amber, what advice would you give your 10-year-old self?
Ooh. I talk to my 10-year-old self all the time. It's so funny. And I mean, I think it would be, I see you. I love you. You're safe here. It's okay.
That's so good. I think some days if I were to just hear that, I might just replay this end of you saying it to me. Some days you need that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Amber, thank you so much for being on the show.
So good. I'm
tingling. Adore you. We're about to be in a wedding together. Yes. So good. But thank you so much. You guys, please, please, please check out Amber's book. Get it, buy it. Where else can they find you, Amber? And where can they purchase the book?
They can purchase the book at choosewonder.com and anywhere books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the places, hopefully all the bookstores. And then I love Instagram, so I'm a very avid user, love the words and the visuals. So I'm Hey Amber Ray on Instagram.
Your Insta's so pretty.
Oh, thanks.
If you want inspiration and prettiness, go to Amber's Instagram and all the things.
And hopefully some deep talk too.
That too. All right. Love you, girl.
Love you.
Thank you so much.
Yay.
Woo! You guys, how amazing was that? So this is definitely an episode to listen to again, to pick up all the practices and golden nuggets that Amber dropped. And you know, if you want even more, you guys gotta check out her book, Choose Wonder Over Worry. It's so good. And Amber gets super raw and vulnerable, and she goes even deeper into the practices that she touched on today.
Now, I want to reiterate what was shared here in this episode, and that is that step one to any form of inner transformation or elevation is amping up your self-awareness and developing a loving relationship with yourself. So if this is something you want support with, I want to hook you up. Now, I've created a free self-love gift. It's a kickstart that will give you some powerful practices to get on your journey to increasing your self-awareness, to owning your worth, rocking your confidence, and opening up to your own love to radically transform your life. And you can download that free gift that I created just for you at stephaniekwong.com/self-love-kickstart. And as per usual, there's a little extra boost of empowerment for you on my Instagram, where I've got a mini video of Amber sharing her best tip on how to connect with your truth and to let go of what doesn't serve you. So head on over to my Instagram. The handle is @IamStephanieKwong to check it out. And if there's someone you know who could benefit from this episode, please, please share it with them. And if you got value from this episode and you want more, I would absolutely love for you to subscribe to the podcast. And if you feel called to leave me a 5-star review on iTunes, because that means we can support even more people to rise higher together. And finally, for everything that we mentioned in today's episode and for the links to connect with Amber or to buy her book, you can check it out in the show notes. And that's over at stephaniekwong.com/EP18. And you can check out all my other podcast episodes there too. Okay, until next time, I'm sending you so much love.